What Women Must Know with Sheryl Selman, Mondays at 2 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Hello and welcome everyone to What Women Must Know. This is a show about holistic perspectives and solutions for women's health matters, but I have to say it's really a show that is designed to empower people of all genders so they can get the knowledge and make more informed choices and decisions regarding their life. I'm your host, Dr. Sheryl Selman. I'm a naturopathic doctor, psychotherapist, author. I have actually two radio shows. My other show is every Sunday at 4 p.m. on this very network, and it's a call-in show called The Women's Healing Circle. And as always, it's just such a pleasure having you join us today for another exploration and in-depth conversation into subjects that all of us really must know. I just want to make a few announcements. I've got some exciting things to share with everyone. I have been working on my latest book. It's actually my fourth book called The Promise of HCG, How to Banish Fat, Resculpt Your Body, and Rebalance Your Metabolism. Now, this is a book based upon my own personal journey of finding a solution to the incredibly frustrating stubborn fat that I was accumulating around my middle and elsewhere. You've heard me talk about this before. If you've been listening in, I found a way to get to the cause of the problem, which actually isn't about just limiting your calories and doing more exercise. That's actually an old paradigm. It's not really working. But there is a way to get to the cause, which has to do with resetting the key fat-burning center of your brain. And that's done on the program using HCG, which is a hormone-like substance made in the cells of men and women. It's called human chorionic gonadotropin. So I wrote a book about the experience, the science, the validation. I have leading medical doctors talking about their own personal experiences and endorsing this approach. So it's just hot off the press. If you go to my website, whatwomenmustknow.com, I am providing the book as a special deal. You get a personalized autographed copy, no shipping, and you can read a book that profoundly affected my life, and I'm sure it will yours. So take advantage of that offer, The Promise of HCG. And if you go up to whatwomenmustknow.com, by the way, and if you opt in, and I invite you to opt in, so you'll be on my list, you'll also be notified of my free teleseminar coming up this week on Thursday the 14th. It's called The Missing Pieces of the Weight Loss Puzzle. And there's some fantastic new research that really gets to some fascinating areas that make huge, huge difference in helping to maintain our ideal weight. And without that knowledge, it's really a challenge to do so. So I'm going to be sharing what I have been investigating and incorporating into my life and in the success of my patients, and I hope you will all be there because it'll be a very interesting and very different type of angle on what is really going on. And to get that information, what you need to do is opt in at whatwomenmustknow.com. And then it will be sent to you. And you'll be on my email list and get all my special reports and all sorts of neat information that will be coming down the track very soon. So I just wanted to share that bit of news with you. And let's talk about today's show. So I have been having conversations with so many people these days who are needing to make changes in their lives. for one reason or other, their jobs are changing, or they're losing their jobs, or they're trying to get out of debt, or trying to heal their bodies, or, you know, dealing with many of the challenges that life gives us. And I've been doing my best to support them and encourage them to understand that they have a power within themselves to move through the situation. In fact, come out even stronger, wiser, and more successful on so many levels than they were before. It's kind of hard to convince people when they're in the midst of trauma and fear and terror. And we all have heard the terms that you can create anything you want, you have a power within you that can guide you, that can overcome all seeming problems. We've heard that. Today, you're going to be meeting a very, very special man who I trust as he shares his experience, his journey, his insights and wisdoms from his own life experience will provide you with the spark to support you in taking the challenges before you and turning them into great victories because you have access to the resources and the power within you that can make anything possible. So this is an inspirational interview. I'm so glad you're all listening today because as I was going through the book, which we're going to be talking about, called Obstacle, Transforming Adversity into Success. Actually, it's Obstacle Illusions, Transforming Adversity into Success. The author is Stephen J. Hobson. And why did I invite Stephen to be on the show? What is his message? Why do I feel he is such an inspiration? And I am very moved by Stephen's story, actually very touched by it. And let me just share a little bit about who this amazing man is. Stephen J. Hobson was born deaf, but quickly learned to speak and began attending public school. At 5 years old, he told his parents he would become a pilot and was dismissed as being foolish. Of course, who wouldn't think a five-year-old who is deaf would never become a pilot? But as an adult, he made aviation history by becoming the world's first deaf instrument-rated pilot. He also became an award-winning Wall Street stockbroker, and he is now a transformational speaker inspiring thousands of people worldwide to believe in themselves and achieve the impossible. We are all here to achieve the impossible. And we're going to be having a wonderful conversation with Stephen. And just let me, if you're wondering how I'm going to do that, let me just tell you that Stephen is with us. He also has his interpreter with us. And as I ask Stephen the questions or have the conversation with Stephen, he will get that communication from me. It'll be interpreted by his interpreter, and then he will be responding to the questions. So it's going to be a most interesting interview. It certainly will be a profoundly inspiring interview. And I guess it's time to bring Stephen on. So, Stephen, I just want to thank you for being here with me today. It is such a pleasure to have you on the show, and I'm so excited about having a chance to have this conversation with you.
Well, Joe, it's my pleasure to be on the show with you also. I am so excited to be speaking with you. Thank you for the opportunity.
It's my pleasure. And, you know, I guess, hard to know where to begin. There's so many questions. But I'd like to hear your experience of what happened when you were born deaf. I mean, you've never heard a sound, and you managed to learn not only how to speak, but how to speak very well. How did that happen for you?
Well, let's see here. First of all, let me just start out by telling you that it wasn't until I was 3 years of age when it was discovered that I was deaf. Back in those days, they were not testing babies. And so my mom knew that something wasn't quite right. And one day, my grandmother came into the living room. She was over at the house helping out. And she called out my name from behind me. And then when I wasn't responding, she called my mother into the living room, and my mom tried calling out from behind me also. And so they took me to the hospital the next day, and they had me evaluated. And that's when they found out that I was deaf. Right then and there, my mom decided that she would have me learn how to talk. And so I've had many years of speech therapy. I would go to school. By the way, I was mainstreamed, which means that they put me in a public school. And I was often the only deaf child in the whole school, all the way through elementary, junior high, and high school. And I had 1 hour of speech therapy every day in school. And then I would come home, and I would spend another hour with my mother, and we would be learning how to pronounce words. My mother would point to a picture in a picture booklet. Let's say we were looking at a picture of a bear, and my mother would point to it, and that she would take my hand and put it on her throat for me to feel the vibration. And then my mother would repeat the word, and that she would have me put my hand on my throat and have me repeat the word. And we would go back and forth like that for hours. And we did that for quite some time. And this is how I learned how to talk.
Your mother must have been a very special woman to do this, because this is not the usual way a parent would hope to, create the greatest support for a deaf child.
That's right. That's exactly right. I was very fortunate. My mother was galvanized into action once she found out that I was deaf. She swept into action, and she started talking to doctors and psychologists and teachers of deaf children and other parents of deaf children to try and come up with the best way to educate me. And so a decision was made back then that I would learn how to speak.
Was there opposition from the school system? Were they receptive to having a deaf child enter mainstream public school?
Well, I think there was a little bit of resistance, but my mother was one of those people who just wouldn't take no for an answer. And I think that's where I got that personality from. My mother was the type of person who would just never take no for an answer. And so I don't know exactly what it is that you did, but you worked tirelessly to convince the school district that I was certainly capable of being mainstreamed in the public school system. And so that's when it all began.
When you were a child, did you feel that you had a disability? Obviously you were different, but did you feel like you were, disadvantaged, or did you just have a sense of your own self at that time?
You know, that's a very, very good question, Cheryl. Very good question. To be honest with you, I don't remember a lot of hardship when I was a young boy. I do remember being happy-go-lucky. I remember being happy-go-lucky at that time. On the outside, I was a very gregarious kid with a lot of personality, but on the inside, though, I think I had low self-esteem. Let me describe to you what it is that I looked like back then. I was a skinny kid with yellow buck teeth, and I had a hearing aid box that was strapped around my chops that stuck out like a stirrup thumb, and two hearing aid cords that ran up to both ears. And so I do remember some of the kids teaching me. Perhaps they made fun of the way I spoke, or they would turn off the lights so that I couldn't read their lips. But honestly, I don't remember my childhood being all that difficult. It wasn't until I was a teenager, however, that I knew that I was really different from the other kids. You see, when you're young, you don't really know that you're different until you reach maybe the pre-teenage years, and then you start to see, oh, you know, I am different. And then it starts to bother you a little bit more. That's how it was for me.
As a child or as a teenager, what did you do to cope with those teasings and, you know, the cruelty of teenagers and kids?
I think I just had a good attitude about it, I guess. I wasn't a fighter or anything. In other words, I never got into fights. And so if someone was teasing me, I don't recall, you know, fighting with my fists. But I do recall something that happened with a bully in school. If you would like me to tell you about that, I'll be happy to.
Yes, yes, please do.
Okay, well, let me just say that it all began with my fifth grade teacher. When I was put in elementary school, I was actually not doing very well. I had a hard time telling time. I couldn't count money, and I had a hard time keeping up with group conversations. And so they almost helped me back in fourth grade. No one knew what to do with me. But my mother came to the rescue again, and she proposed that they pass me on to fifth grade. And in particular, she wanted me to be put in the fifth grade teacher's class. And the powers to be were convinced that it was time to pass me on. So they put me in Mrs. Jordan's class. Mrs. Jordan was a light woman with salt and pepper hair and a brown eye that would just light up the room. And she had a very powerful personality. She was one of those people who you just wanted to get close to because she was so beautiful and powerful and loving. So one day, she had a question for the class. And for once in my young life, I knew the answer. But I was afraid that she would call on me. I raised my hand very slowly. I remember this as if it happened yesterday. I raised my hand very slowly, but hoping that she wouldn't call on me. But as soon as she looked at me, I knew she was going to call on me. So my heart pounded louder and louder. Each time my hand went up higher, my heart was threatening to jump out of my chest. And she called on me. And then I gave her the answer. And what she did next, I never forgot. She said three words that forever changed my life. And she said, "That's right, Stephen," like that. She slammed her right foot on the floor, and she whirled her finger a full circle. And I remember thinking to myself, even though I was only in fifth grade, that I was going to make something of myself. Then a week later, I'm on the playground, and guess who comes walking towards me? The bully. David was a bully who beat up everybody in the whole school except me. I was on the playground. It was a beautiful day. The sun was shining. And I saw David walking towards me. Now, David looked like the font from Happy Days. Did you ever watch Happy Days?
Yes.
Okay, well, the font was, okay, well, his name was David, but in my mind, he was the font. Well, I guess I didn't know about the font back then, but he was walking to me with a cocky swagger, and he had his lips curled up into a sneer like Albert Presley. And he was walking with a cocky swagger towards me. And I remember thinking, oh no, my time had come. And all the kids knew that too. So they all surrounded me on the playground. They formed a circle around me. But they left enough room for Data to make his way in the circle. So Data walked into the circle and closed up on us. And it was just me and him. And then all of a sudden, I was overwhelmed with this. Something overcame me. And I threw my hand off like a traffic cop would. And I threw the bullet off. And I saw a brief flicker of fear in his eyes. I was the only one who saw it, nobody else did. And that gave me more comfort to do what I was to be, what I was about to do next. I said to David, and I'm pointing to my hearing aid box, remember, which is like really big. And I said, David, if you punch this hearing aid box, it'll blow up the whole school. And I clapped, like, I clapped really loud. And it startled him. And David's eyes got so big, and he took one step back, and then he took another. And then, by magic, the circle opened up, and he ran away as fast as he could. And then I looked around, and everyone was clapping and jumping. I became the most popular kid in the whole school. That was my experience with a bully.
Well, and that was a life-changing moment for you.
Oh, yes.
It's always amazing, isn't it, how we find certain angels coming into our life, you know, like your teacher, just amazing people who just enter the scene, maybe just for a brief moment, but have a great impact and great gifts to give us that stay with us for our entire life.
Absolutely, and in fact, that's one of the themes that run throughout the book, that all of us come into our lives at just the right time, at the right place, for the right reason, even if it's for one moment, or an eternity, or a lifetime. Mm. I believe that every single person has a role to play on the stage of your life. These are all the angels. All these people are angels in one way or the other. Even David was an angel because David taught me how to stand up on my own 2 feet. Yeah. So we all have a role to play in each other's lives on the stage of our life. Everybody plays the character.
Yes, absolutely. Even those people who we think are the bullies making our life miserable have gifts to give us.
That's right. That's exactly right. And David gave me one of the biggest gifts anyone could ever have given me. Because not only do I remember it, but I grew more confident. And I talk about it in all of my speeches. And in my book, I talk about it. It's a story that I share with people so that if people are going through a hard time, we all have bullies, whether we're young kids or adults. When we become an adult, those bullies turn into maybe the boss, or turn into the so-called competitors, or people who are just not very nice. They could be bullies. So
Right. Those
characters change over time as we get older, but they all play a very similar role.
You know, you've had some amazing experiences in your life, and I want you to share a bit about some of the different careers you've had and things you've learned. And then I want to go on and in the second half of the show, and if you wouldn't mind, I know you're a transformational speaker now, and I'd like you to really share with us some of those profound wisdoms that you've gained along the way. But let's just stick with your life for a little bit, okay?
Okay, John, that sounds wonderful. Well, after graduating from college in the early 80s, I got my first job at a bank on Wall Street. I started working on Wall Street right around 1982. And so I ended up working at the bank for 10 years. And then I had a career change and I became a stockbroker after that. So I have been working on Wall Street for 15 years, and then I had a spiritual revelation right around 2006. I think it was 2006, and the revelation was my destiny was not to be a stockbroker anymore, but to be a global transformational speaker and an author. And so that's when I realized that I had to make a shift and go on that path. So that's pretty in a nutshell what I've done over the past 15, 20 years. Oh, and I also learned how to fly in 2006. Well, I actually started to fly around 2000, and I became the world's first deaf instrument pilot in 2006. So in between speaking engagements, I learned how to fly.
Because flying was a passion that you always had, and you wanted to actually fulfill it, is that what made you become a pilot in 2006? In 2000, rather?
Yes. I had always wanted to be a pilot. Ever since I was four, I had wanted to be a pilot. And let me tell you about how all that started. I begged my mother to take me to the airport. And finally, she said, okay. And so every week we would drive to the airport, and how that would happen would be, as soon as her car pulled up to the fence that surrounded the perimeter of the airport, I would be out of the car and running to the fence, waiting for the next plane to take off. And as soon as the plane was positioned to take off, I would run back to my mother's car, and I would put my hand on the hood, and I would put my ear to the hood of her car, and I would wait for what I always knew was coming. If you've ever put your hand on a washing machine, you would know how that felt every time a plane flew overhead. It always made my day, and we did that for a long, long time. That's how I became a pilot, because I had this dream ever since I was a child. Even though people told me I couldn't fly, I never doubted that someday it would happen.
I want to go back to a couple of things. You kind of talked about your Wall Street experience, but you didn't just become a stockbroker. You were an extremely successful stockbroker, an award-winning stockbroker. What was that like, being a deaf person in that industry? Was that a challenge in its own right for you?
It was definitely a challenge because, for one thing, for anybody to be in that field, it's challenging. Because you are, first of all, living off of commissions. So every month you have to be making a certain amount of money in commissions. There was no salary. The only salary that I had was at the very beginning when they were training. They put me on a 3-month salary plan, and then after that I went right on commission. So it was up to me to find clients who wanted financial planning. And so back in those days, they didn't have the technology that deaf people enjoy today. So I had to make phone calls in a very tedious way. Without going into great detail, let me just say that I had a little machine that looked like a typewriter and a phone. And I would have to call an 800 number to get an operator that also had one of those machines, and then I would go back and forth between the operator and my client or my prospect, back and forth. And a half-hour phone call would easily turn into an hour. And so the clients that I got were the patron type. They were very patient with me. They liked me, and they were willing to put up with that. And so I was lucky in that way. I was able to attract the right kind of clients who did not mind spending an hour or two on the phone. It was challenging because I had to go from making a 9-to-5 salary to 100% commitment. And so I had to make a complete shift in my mind and how, in terms of how that was going to work. But I had one thing in my favor, and that was my ability to stay focused. I was a very goal-oriented person, and I knew almost exactly what I needed to do in order to become successful. I always used the power of visualization, and I always visualized what I was going to do for that month or for that year. And eventually, I started to do rather well, but it was difficult in the beginning because I had to get the momentum going. But once I got the momentum going, then I began to run on its own, if you know what I mean.
I do. I mean, that's so amazing. I want to just stop for a moment, Stephen. We need to take a few minutes for a station break, and then we will come back with the rest of your amazing story and wisdom to share with us. So be patient. Stay there. We'll be right back.
To the Progressive Radio Network each day for the best progressive minds in the world.
Hi, this is Dr. Meir Eisenstein. Every Thursday morning, 10 a.m. Eastern Time, I will be coming to you live on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com. I will bring my background as a physician and as an attorney to help you with a minimal pharmaceutical and a minimal surgical approach to your medical issues. Please come join me.
So to join in on the conversation, call 888-874-4888. Ask Dr. Eisenstein, 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, only on Progressive Radio Network.
Incisive analysis on the state of our planet from a black left perspective, join me, Glenn Ford, and my colleague Nellie Bailey at Black Agenda Radio, right here on the Progressive Radio Network. We bring you the full scope of reality as we and our interlocutors see it every Monday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time. Black Agenda Radio, the place to get oriented to the black left worldview on the Progressive Radio Network.
This is Barry Farber with the best self-improvement advice you've ever had or ever heard. Learn a foreign language. Sounds impossible? Give me a chance to prove it. I'm Barry Farber. I can guide you to mastery of any language in the world quickly, easily, inexpensively, and at home. You will grow culturally, linguistically, intellectually, commercially, professionally, even romantically. Get that smile off. Face it, happened to me. The Barry Farber Language Club, every Tuesday at 3 p.m. Tuesdays, 3. Right here.
Have you heard? The Burt Cohen Show brings you the hidden truths behind the stories that affect us all and gives you the information you need to build freedom, community, and a much better world. This is Burt Cohen. My past shows include The New Media Power of Comcast, Socialism for Wall Street Only, and How to Empower Your Own Community Over Corporate Interests. For archives, go to ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com and listen to The Burt Cohen Show every Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time on the ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com. The Burt Cohen Show. There's really nothing like it.
The Progressive Radio Network, your home for progressive thinkers.
hello, everyone. We are back. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman. You are listening to What Women Must Know, and I'm so glad that you're able to be tuning in today because we have such a wonderful guest. His name is Stephen J. Hobson. He is the author of the book Obstacle Illusions, Transforming Adversity into Success, and he has certainly been an inspiration to thousands of people around the world since he was born deaf and went on to not only go through the public school education system, but become an award-winning stockbroker, the first deaf instrument-rated pilot, and now he is traveling around the world and inspiring people to live their dreams and talking about his own personal journey in his book and the wisdom that he's gathered along the way. So we've been having a conversation with Stephen, and if you've just been tuning in, we're doing that through the help of his interpreter, who is interpreting my questions to Stephen, and then Stephen's sharing his answers with us. So Stephen, what was the experience that happened to you that changed your life at that place where, after being a successful six-figure stockbroker, making all of that happen, what was the experience that occurred that changed the direction of your life?
Okay. Hello, Joe. Nice to be back on after your station break. I hope you had a nice break.
Yes, thank you.
So, you want to know more about my experience that happened that caused me to leave my six-figure job? Well, let me just say that in the winter of 1996, I was wanting to get away for a break, a vacation, because, you know, working on Wall Street, as you can imagine, involved a lot of work. And, you know, it can be very stressful. And so I wanted to go away. And so I went to Florida to go on vacation. And so it was a beautiful day, kind of like how it is here in Iowa right now. It's sunny and the sky is blue, very warm. I took my dog to the beach, and I was practically the only person on the beach that morning. And so I found myself a lounge chair and proceeded to read a really interesting book. But apparently it wasn't interesting enough because I began to doze off, and I actually fell asleep. And so, you know, the combination of the hot sun and the warm wind that was blowing across the beach just made me fall asleep. And I don't know how long it was, but I would say maybe 10, 15 minutes later, a very powerful thought rammed its way through my head. And the thought was that I was not destined to be a stockbroker for the rest of my life, but to become a global transformational speaker and an author. And now, of course, the thought that had come out of nowhere shielded me awake. And so I had to, as I opened my eyes, I had to blink against the hard sun because it was very bright that day. And I looked around to see if there was anybody else on the beach because I thought, well, maybe someone had the nerve to come up to me and yell into my ear. But there was nobody on the beach. I was the only one. And at that moment, I knew that God had spoken to me, or the universe, or my higher self, or my spirit guide, however you want to look at it. We all have a different way of looking at that. The funny thing was, the thought was so clear and so powerful. I just knew that that was what I was going to do. At that point, I had not spoken to a live audience in quite some time, and I had never written a book. But somehow, I knew that was going to happen. 6 months later, I went back to New York, and I told my manager that I was going to be leaving. And interestingly enough, even though I was making a lot of money, my boss kind of knew that my time was coming to an end also. Mm. 6 months later, I walked out and never looked back. That is what happened.
So you quit the job. Did you start writing a book? What did you do after you left this very lucrative job?
I started hanging around in coffee shops. I was living off some of my investments at the time, and so I was able to quit and live off my investments for a little while. And so I started going to coffee shops, and I started to just write from the heart. And pretty soon, one story began to form after another. And then I decided that I was going to submit some of my stories to books like Chicken Soup for the Soul. I'm sure you've heard of Chicken Soup for the Soul, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. Well, I submitted one of my stories to Chicken Soup for the College Soul and other books. And my story started to become accepted. And that gave me more confidence in my ability to write. So I kept writing, and pretty soon I formed my own manuscript. It was about 300 pages long. And at some point down the road, I began to think, well, maybe this was too big of a book. So I cut it in half. And the book that you are reading or have read, it's that one half of the original manuscript.
So, Stephen, tell us a little bit about your book, Obstacle Illusions, Transforming Adversity into Success. What are some of the key messages you want to communicate through this book?
Some of the key messages are, number one, obstacles are nothing but illusions. They are all in the mind. You can either see an obstacle or a challenge in one of two ways. One, you see it as a problem, or two, you see it as an opportunity. And so the message is that, based on my own experiences, obstacles are opportunities for growth. The other message is that nothing happens by chance. Everything happens for a reason. If you look for the good in everything, if you look hard enough, you will see healing taking place. You will see life lessons to be learned, even in the midst of challenges. And the other thing I want to mention is that everything you need to achieve your dreams will be made available through what I call divinely orchestrated events. The appearance of the right people and other resources start popping up that you may not have previously thought about. All you need to do is to make a firm decision that you are going to head in a certain direction, and you will be given the resources that you need to achieve your dreams, even if other people think it's impossible.
I gather you've been, your book is really successful. It's relatively new, but it's doing really well. I know that you have been a guest on the Lisa Show. I mean, amazing things are happening for you to fulfill this mission in your life. The question I'm asking of you now, Stephen, is what would you say to so many people who are going through great times of transition, are really scared or frightened? Their world as they knew it is changing. Their jobs are changing. The financial situation is changing. Relationships are changing. Their health is challenged. How would you support these people through these times? What would you share with them?
Well, first of all, I think that the first thing that I would like to share with those people is to first take a step back, stop in the midst of your challenges. Usually when people are going through challenges, their mind is running like a million miles an hour, and they're worried, they're fearful that things aren't going to work out, and their mind starts to work overtime. Stop. When you stop and you take a look at what's happening, you are then in a position to make some changes in terms of how you perceive what's happening. How I have done this is by changing my perception of what's happening. As a matter of fact, everything in your life is based on how you perceive them to be. If those people could stop for a moment, I know this might sound cliche, if I don't know if I pronounced that word correctly, but take a deep breath and just really look at the situation and accept it for what it is. If you look at the situation, you acknowledge it, accept what's happening, and see the greater good in what's happening, and be open to the possibilities. That would be the first step. The second step is to surround yourself with people who support you, because we cannot do this alone. We want to be surrounded by people who can help us, elevate us, bring us to the next level, inspire us, because we can't do this alone. So those are the two main steps I will tell those people that are going through a hard time. I've been through a hard time many times. I've been through situations when I didn't know when or how I was going to pay the rent or how I was going to buy food for the week. So I've been there.
What are there some practical things that would help people to shift gears into that thinking, you know, that way of addressing their challenges right now that seem to be such obstacles? Are there some practical things that people can do?
Just have them go out and buy a notebook, a colorful notebook. Find a notebook that has a color that they like, and then open that notebook and write what they're grateful for. Because when you write down at least three things that you're grateful for, and you do it often enough, then you start to shift your perception about what is happening in your life. Instead of being overwhelmed with all the horrible things that are happening, why don't we take a look at the good things that we have? There's always someone who's worse off than us. So if they could just write down 3 to 5 things that they're grateful for and do that consistently, pretty soon they will have developed a new neural pathway in their brain, which will help them shift their perception and help them see that this may not be such a bad thing after all. That will be one very practical thing. I used to do that, and still do. The other thing I used to do was I would stand in front of a mirror. Now, I haven't told very many people that, but I would stand in front of a mirror, and I would say things like, "I love you." I would actually do that, and I would be thinking to myself, well, you know, this is so silly. But I did that. I did that for a long time. Not only did I write in my gratitude notebook 5 things that I was grateful for, I also went into the bathroom and looked at myself in the mirror, and I said, you know, I love you. And I smiled. I smiled at myself. But feeling silly the whole time, but it worked.
You know, I think it's so important what you're saying. It's like taking the actions every day, some action every day that will allow you to shift your focus from one of fear or expecting the worst to being, first of all, grateful for what you do have and look for it, which helps people to get into a different energy in their thinking.
Absolutely, and I could have thought of something else, and this is also another theme that runs throughout my book. People who are maybe not so nice to you, perhaps, or people who don't treat you well for some reason, they're there for a reason also. And one of the hardest things anyone can do is to look at those people with love and compassion. That is so difficult, because when you're in the middle of feeling not so good about that person, it's very hard for you to step back and look at this person in another way. So that's another thing. I don't know if you noticed this, but a lot of our so-called challenges are caused by other people. I'm using quotation marks with my fingers here because we realize that on a deeper spiritual level, nobody causes anything. It just is what it is, and it's just a matter of seeing how things are happening the way they are. And looking at people who seem to be causing us problems, the biggest thing we can do is to look at them with love and compassion.
I love everything you're saying. I think we have to be reminded of this. In fact, I'm going to go out and get my notebook and write my three gratitudes every day, which I understand the importance of looking at things through the eyes of gratitude, but I'm actually going to go and write them down because I think it's so much more powerful when you write things down.
Absolutely, that goes for writing your goals down or whatever. When you write anything on a piece of paper, something beautiful and tangible takes place. There's a shift that takes place on a deep level. When you write things on paper, it's that little act of writing those words that makes magic happen. So I'm really happy to hear that you're going to get a notebook. What color is it going to be?
Oh, it has to be purple.
Purple, I love purple. Did you know that purple means royalty?
Well, I live in a purple house, Stephen.
What? You live in a purple house? Oh, my goodness. You'll have to send me some pictures of that house.
I have lots of purple in my house. Must be royalty somewhere. the last question I want to ask, because our conversation is, we've gone through an hour. It's amazing how quickly time goes. What an illusion it is. How is your global transformation and author career going?
It's fabulous. It's going fantastic. I have some things lined up. My next trip is going to be Chicago at the end of the month, and then in August I'm going to California, and also in the same month, August, I have a potential speaking engagement in Dallas, Texas, and so the book is actually opening many doors of opportunities for me. I have not yet spoken overseas this year, but that will be a goal that I have. I want to speak in Singapore, Australia, London, Paris, and maybe even South Africa. So those are some of the things that I have on my lips.
Well, you have a very exciting life as well as a very rewarding life right now.
I would say yes, and I'm very, very grateful. And by the way, that's something that I'm grateful for every single day. I write down that I'm grateful that I have this opportunity to make a difference in the lives of many people, including one very interesting segment of the population, and that is young people. When I was writing this book, I had not intended my audience to be young people, But what I'm finding is the parents who are buying their books, are buying my book, their children are somehow picking it up and reading it and not being able to put it down. So I have a very young audience also, which is taking me complete, which has taken me for a complete loop. Because when I was writing the book, I had not thought about that market. But my goodness, young people are telling their parents they love the book.
Well, I am so thrilled for you, Stephen. You do have an inspiring message. You and your life is an inspiring message just by example. And I want everyone to know that they can go to Stephen's website, which is S.P. Hopson, H-O-P-S-O-N, S for Stephen J. Hopson, .com to learn more about Stephen and his work and his lectures, or to pick up his book. You can also go to Obstacle Illusions book, which is the name of his best-selling book here, obstacleillusionsbook.com, and pick up a copy to be inspired for yourself and for your family and your friends. And, Stephen, I just wish you the greatest success. I don't have to wish you success. I know you're creating it. And I just really support everyone who's listening in creating their success in their lives as well. Thank you so much for being with us today.
You know, Joe, the pleasure was all mine. I really had a good time. Like you said, the 1 hour really passed very quickly. I can't believe that we're coming to a conclusion. It's amazing when you have so much fun. You are a great interviewer. You had the most interesting questions. It made it easy for me to answer them. So I thank you so much for your time.
Oh, it has been my total pleasure, and wishing you you know, the best of everything, always. Thank you, Stephen, for being with us today.
Thank you. Take care now. Bye-bye.
Bye now. And this is Dr. Cheryl Selman. We've been having this wonderful conversation with Stephen J. Hopson. He is the author of Obstacle Illusions. You can go to his website, obstacleillusionsbook.com. If you're feeling that life is getting a bit tough, feel like you're a bit of a victim, if you feel a little lost, if you're scared, fearful, anxious about whatever may be going on at this moment in your life, then I really encourage you to read Stephen Hopson's book, Obstacle Illusions, Transforming Adversity into Success. We all need to be inspired, especially at times when we have some of the greatest challenges before us, which are also the times when we can make the greatest transformational leaps. So, until next time, I wish you a wonderful, inspiring week. Remember to always honor the wisdom of your feminine self. Bye for now.